Good morning. It is 9:05, Wednesday, September 2nd. This is the TDN Writers Room presented by Keeneland. My name is Joe Bianca. I'm the associate editor of the Thoroughbred Daily News. We finally made it to Derby Week, even though it now seems like we're closer to next year's Derby than we were to this year's Derby when we started talking about it.
I am Bill Finley, a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News, and I agree, it's a thrill after all these many long, arduous months to say happy Kentucky Derby Week, everybody.
Jonathan Green, general manager of DJ Stable. And I have to say, this is like waking up Christmas morning with a new puppy, walking downstairs, finding out the Giants won the Super Bowl, and they have the number one draft pick. That's how exciting this week is for me.
I'm Alan Carrasa, managing editor of the TDN, and I, like eight of the Derby horses, am a 50-1 chance to make it through the weekend.
I've never seen John that excited. It's a little disturbing.
It's racing at its best. The Oaks, the Derby, and all the undercard. And we got a couple of big yearling sales coming up also. I mean, this is like, I'm like a kid in a candy store with like a $50 bill. This is unbelievable.
Coming in hot.
Coming in hot and ready.
Appreciate the enthusiasm. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Reminder that the Keeneland September yearling sale starts September 13th, that's next Sunday, and runs through September 25th with 4,272 yearlings on offer. Also, Keeneland released an extensive list of protocols for COVID-19 for jockeys for the upcoming fall meet, which of course leads into the Breeders' Cup World Championships. So good job by Keeneland having those in place ahead of time. We saw some issues earlier in the year with different tracks that didn't quite have as stringent protocols for jockeys. So good on them for being proactive and getting out in front of that. And then, of course, Keeneland September is something we all look forward to. We'll be here before you know it. So we had the Kentucky Derby draw yesterday. As everyone said, we are finally here at Derby Week. We have made it through the fog, and we have the Run for the Roses to look forward to this Saturday. We've talked in the past few weeks about how it's maybe not the most exciting Derby of all time, but it nevertheless is the Derby, and we finally made it after 4 months delay. We had a big scratch yesterday with Art Collector. It was really unfortunate for me and my stable. We'll talk about that in a little bit as we run down, you know, where we are after all the prep races. He had a minor foot bruise. Sounds like something that won't keep him out too long. Hopefully he'll make it to the Preakness and or the Breeders' Cup. Tom Drury said it's just a minor thing and they had to do right by the horse. So good on them for doing that. As it is, we have three horses in single digits on the morning line. Tis the Law was made the 3-5 morning line favorite. I'm sure if he's going to be that short, maybe 4-5, even money. But they all drew next to each other on the far outside, which is an interesting little wrinkle. In the 16 hole, we have Honor AP, and then 17 is Tis the Law, and 18 is Authentic. One of my first impressions, we're going to go around and we're going to talk about long shots. We like how we, you know, how we see the race setting up. But one of my first impressions was that it doesn't seem like there's a ton of speed in the race. And I think that's something that's pretty rare in the Derby. I think we usually have a couple of runoff speed types, whether it's, you know, sprinters who have recently stretched out or, you know, long shots whose only chance is to go to the front. I don't know that we have that this year. I think Authentic is probably going to be the most likely front runner with John Velasquez breaking from the outside. I think they have to be aggressive early on with him. I don't know. I think there's a lot of stalking types, but I don't know that we're going to have a super fast speed duel. Which is unfortunate for me because some of the long shots that I do like are late running types and, you know, they need a little bit of a setup going into that final turn. Tis the Law obviously is way the horse to beat. I think, you know, it's kind of obvious that if he runs back to his Traverse, it's going to take a lot for someone to beat him. If he runs back to any of his other races before that, then I think he might be a bit of a vulnerable favorite. So I think that's kind of what it comes down to. And, you know, while I'm not running to the window to bet against him, I do think that like I said, there's that one race, and I don't generally like short price favorites that have one race that's better than everybody else and then a bunch of other races that are good, but not necessarily head and shoulders above everybody else. Initial thoughts from the Derby, starting with Bill.
Well, first of all, I want some of those John Green happy pills that he was taking this morning. I hate to be Scrooge here, but John, I'm not feeling it. Maybe this is something we could talk about. I mean, the thing was supposed to be run 4 months ago. We've got a 3-5 favorite. It's the second leg of the Triple Crown. There won't be anybody in the stands. Yeah, it's the Kentucky Derby, but I think to say that, you know, there's that same buzz out there for a normal year, unless it's just me and, you know, maybe I just woke up on the wrong side of the bed this morning. I'm sorry, I'm not feeling it. And you know my phone number. I definitely want some of that stuff, John, because, man, it did some real work on you. Joe, I'd like to look at this from a betting standpoint. All of us like to bet on the horses. I've been on the Tislaw bandwagon since the champagne. Obviously, I'm not going to get off them now. But who wants to bet a 3-5 or 4-5 shot, especially in the Kentucky Derby? I think the way to approach the race is kind of look at the race within the race, the other 17 horses. If you assume that Tislaw is going to win, what's going to happen among the other 17? And if you put those in the into the mix, it's not a stellar group by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a kind of a riddle from a handicapping standpoint. And as long as Honor AP or Authentic don't run second, I think from the exactas, you've got a chance to get some sort of strange horses in there to maybe make a little bit of a nice price. I mean, I think everybody kind of falls into three categories. The horses that just have absolutely no shot. I mean, I'm not going to get excited about Finnick the Fierce. I know that's a horse near and dear to your heart, Joe. But I thought that there's a couple sneaky horses. I came up with Sole Volante, Attachment Rate, and New York Traffic is my wise guy horses that might finish second. So instead of getting 380 on Tislaw, maybe I'll get a $30 exacta, $35 exacta, or something like that. I think they're all horses. I use the Thoroughgraph sheets. They've all run fast enough in their history to be competitive. They'll be good prices. And I just think it's such a crapshoot for the other race. Who's going to finish second, third, and fourth for the exactas, tries, superfectas, and stuff like that.
Yeah, and guys, you're bringing up some excellent points, you know, with regard to how the favorite's going to handle this and also, you know, what to expect in the race. I don't want to repeat some of the things that you guys are talking about, but let me talk about a couple of horses that I think, you know, are off the radar that have a shot. Money Moves, which is a Todd Pletcher horse, a Candy Ride that they spent $975,000 for, you know, won pretty impressively at its debut at Gulfstream, came back in a one turn mile and then had a break until July 25th, ran against all the horses and ran second and is improving dramatically with every race as it gets it under its belt. So Money Moves, who wouldn't even be in the Derby or the Preakness, you know, in previous years, all of a sudden is Pletcher's, you know, opportunity at 30-1. I'm also really happy with the fact that I have not one, but two horses that are on my fantasy list, Mr. Big News and Sole Volante. And really, Bill, to go to what you were saying, if you cross out Sole Volante's Belmont race, he's a really powerful horse and has a really good shot to hit the board. And then you have to look at a horse like Thousand Words, I think, who threw in a clunker in Oaklawn, came back and ran a good second in the Los Alamitos Derby, and then won a listed, granted it was a listed stake race when speed was, you know, was really being favored at, you know, out in California, but they paid $1 million for him. He's really well bred. I think he's coming back into form at 15-1, but there's no question in my mind that they're all running behind Tis the Law, who has just put in such a phenomenal, you know, three-year-old campaign. Now, could you say that he could bounce this race? Yeah, the sheep numbers and the buyer numbers and, you know, all the fancy logistics that you look at say that he will bounce probably. But could he bounce and still win? Yeah, absolutely. He's just that good. And against this field, which maybe isn't as good as the field that he would have run against, you know, had this race been campaigned in May, yeah, he could still bounce and still run well and probably win this race. So I'm excited about the Derby because it's the Derby. I'm excited about the Oaks because I think that's a great race also. But there's a dozen to 15 graded stake races, you know, running this weekend. And they, for the majority, they have really, really good deep fields. And to me, as a fan of the industry, that's what I love about horse racing is all of these top races, all of the big money that's being thrown around, graded stake points and graded stake badges that'll be earned, credentials that'll be earned over the next couple of weeks that'll change the face of racing as well as breeding values. To me, that's why it's so exciting. And then on top of that, I get to work with you guys.
Oh, so wholesome.
Mic drop.
Heartwarming. How do I follow that, John?
Oh, come on, Alan Carlson.
No idea. I guess I'm going to weave a lot of what you guys said into my commentary here. I honestly, Joe, I want to say the pace is going to be genuine. I don't think it's going to be breakneck, but I think it's going to be a truly run race. I do think Authentic's got to go. NY Traffic's going to go. thousand words looks like he wants to be there or thereabouts. So I think they can set a pace that's honest enough. And I don't know that the back markers will be unduly inconvenient. So just hope yet for Finnick, Joe, although he's got the rail. Tweeted this morning, this will be his 10th start. He's got the missing right eye, or left eye as you look at him. It's the fourth time in 10 starts he's got the rail draw, which is quite remarkable, really. But I'm in the camp that it's an 18-horse field. I know Tis the Law. It has proven to be heads and shoulders above his peers to this point. I don't want a 3-5 shot in the Derby. I'm probably playing Honor AP to win. And unfortunately, the scratch of Our Collective means that that Honor AP starts at a price probably 40% less than what he might have been. Instead of 8-1, now he's going to be something around 5-1. I think he should sit. He should be within striking distance. And I think he's one of these horses that has that real quiet, that Monarcos sort of Derby burst in him if they ride him to use it. I think if he's given the right ride, and we can ask Mike Smith later on, if he's given the right ride, I think he can accelerate. I think he's got one of the best finishing punches in the race if they choose to ride him that way. So for a long shot pick, I landed on Sol Volante as well. I'm willing to forgive the Belmont. They said that he didn't handle the track. He was off 10 days, off a really impressive one-mile allowance at Gulfstream where he got back and ran out nicely. If you can forgive him Belmont and, 3-month layoff, I think he's a live chance to run into the numbers at a big price. So those are my thoughts, y'all.
I think that Thousand Words and King Guillermo kind of make up the second, echelon of contenders. I think Thousand Words, the Sheer Belief Stakes was basically a graded stake in terms of who showed up and not having to beat Honor AP that day. Did get away with a pretty slow pace, but ran a 104 buyer. Other than Tis the Law's 109 in the Travers, that's the highest figure in the race. And King Guillermo is so interesting because, he purposefully took all this time off between the Arkansas Derby and the Kentucky Derby, got to Churchill early, has been working bullets there, worked in 58-1, two works back for 5 furlongs. And a horse that, seemed like a bit of a fluke when he won the Tampa Bay Derby like he did. And then he came and backed it up in the Arkansas Derby. I don't think he's going to be 20-1, especially now with the scratch of Art Collector. I think he'll be closer to half of that. Same thing with Thousand Words. I don't know that he's quite going to be 15-1, especially with that big scratch. But I like Finnick the Fierce. I'm willing to stick my neck out a little bit for him. I think he was an ascending type when he ran third in the Arkansas Derby. He was only beaten a length and a half by King Guillermo. And then I think his last two races are a little dirtied up. I think two back, he was in an optional claimer against Art Collector, was kind of forced out of his game, having to press Art Collector from the jump. He's more of a one-run type, and he ended up fading the third in that race. We've seen what Art Collector came back to do. And then the Bluegrass, I thought he made a bit of an early wide move, and then he faded to finish seventh. I don't think he's a particularly likely win candidate. I don't love the rail draw. Obviously, he could have some issues there. But he's also not a total plotter. He's not a complete plotter like my Derby chase horse Enforceable, who is just a deep plotter, one run kind of horse. I think the Fierce could be a little bit closer than people realize if he's able to navigate traffic on that clubhouse turn. Storm the Court, I think his Ohio Derby was actually pretty good from that wide post running third. Ran okay last time in his turf race in the La Jolla. I don't think he's totally impossible. Major Fed has been working really well, seems to be sitting on the top effort. Who else? I like Attachment Rate, who Al has for the fantasy contest. I thought he ran really well in the Ellis Park Derby. And I think he was a horse that, showed a lot early on with his big blowout maiden win. And he ran okay in a couple of stakes, but he didn't really jump forward the way he suggested he would. But I thought he ran really well in the Ellis Park Derby. He really took it to Art Collector on the far turn. And really ran, flattened out a bit late, but I thought really ran almost every step of the way really hard there. New York traffic, not a huge price, but I think he could benefit from a fairly slow pace. I think it's going to be moderate. I agree with Al. I mean, slow pace for the Derby is still like 48, 47 and change for the half mile. So, you know, I obviously don't think they're going to go 50 like it's a New York turf race, but I think that it's going to be reasonable enough that the horses who are close to the pace are going to be at an advantage. And that includes the favorites, Tizzle and Authentic. And I don't think Honor AP is going to be that far out of it either. But I do think it's an interesting field in the lower rungs of the trifectas and superfectas. I think he got a chance to get some prices in there and get the exotics to pay, even if it chalks out like it looks like it might. Any other thoughts from you guys?
Yeah, let's go back to the pace. If Authentic goes from the outside post, which we all think he's going to do, does he clear the field? Does he get 2-3 in front? And where does that put Tiz the Law? I think Tiz the Law, everything again just lines up perfectly for him. He looks like he could get a really good trip. I could see him stalking third, you know, just maybe two lengths off Authentic, maybe even in fourth, something like that. But I would be curious to hear from everyone else, you know, where half mile into the race, where is Authentic? Where is Tiz the Law? Where are the other major players?
I think the fact that this race is devoid of speed has more to do with the top contenders that aren't here, you know, i.e. Nadal and Charlton that showed so much speed, where, you know, you have a bunch of horses that have tactical speed and can kind of sit off it, where it really lays it out, you know, for an opportunity like a Front Runner, like a Thousand Words, to go out there and kind of slow the pace down. I think we can probably get ahead of myself, but we're going to be saying similar things about the Oaks as well with Gamine, where, you know, if they get in front and then slow it down, are they going to have enough left to kick at the end? And you know, that's the big discussion and the $50 million question. Joe, I'm gonna discount Finnick the Fierce. I know I'm not going out on a huge limb saying a 50-1 shot doesn't have a chance to win, but really the only race that horse ever won was going 5/8 of a mile at Indiana back in its 2-year-old year, and has not crossed the wire first in 8 other starts. So
I know what Joe's gonna say.
I have one more thing to say in defense of Finnick the Fierce. He's one of only two horses to beat Tiz the Law.
Right. Okay. He's also the only horse with one eye in the race. I mean, we can throw out crap all the, you know, that we want, but I'm not going on a limb at saying a 50-1 shot doesn't have a chance.
Yeah, who do you like? Don't jump on my 50-1 shot.
I'm going to pick on you on that one. Okay. Pick on the one-eyed horse. Okay. But I love the fact that you like, you know, my horse, Sovolante, that has a legitimate chance, as well as a couple of long shots. I really feel like you know, one of the other horses that we haven't spoken about yet that we probably should make mention of is our friend, well, Money Moves. You know, that was the one that I brought up earlier on about how he's impressive and he's increasing his buyer numbers and sheet numbers and everything like that. What do you guys think? That's a 30-1 shot. What, do you guys have any thoughts on that? Is he just too unseasoned or just not good enough? Because he ran a 98 buyer. I know that's not the be all and end all, but that was an impressive race last time out against older horses.
Well, John, I'll bring up an obvious point about him, and I can see what you're saying, but this horse is making his stakes debut in the Kentucky Derby. You can only get that in this weird year, and obviously he has 0 points. Everybody has gotten away from the old-fashioned aspect of class handicapping because we're all slaves to the figures these days, the buyer numbers, et cetera. But, you know, let's just, you know, harken back to when people used to consider those score things. Can a horse literally be competitive in the Kentucky Derby after coming out of a first level allowance win and then second in a second level allowance win and has not, as I said, never even run in a stakes race before? And you only would get this in the 2020 Kentucky Derby. When it goes back hopefully to normal, you never in a million years see a horse like this even make it into the field.
Right. All good points.
I agree with all that.
If I'm hearing you right, then you're saying that he's got a better chance than Finnick, right?
I think we've exhausted the Finnick the Fierce topic. We can move on to others.
Go ahead, Al. You're up.
I can't wait till he wins and he becomes the new Harvey Boyle of the TDN Writers Room.
Listen, I've done so well with my picks for the stable that the owners and trainer of Finnick the Fierce should be jumping up and down knowing that I'm off their bandwagon.
Don't worry, we'll get to that. I think Al wanted to say something.
Yeah. So I mean, I know that horses like Dale Romans and Dallas Stewart have had horses run into the top three at giant numbers. And so horses like attachment rate and winning impression are in this race. As a rule, these afterthought sort of horses, winning impression, I guess not attachment rate so much, but Necker Island, South Bend, Money Moves. I they're the first horses that I toss. Somebody told me last night to toss Dallas Stewart in races like this in the Oaks is dangerous business. But I want to make one comment about a thousand words. He's in my stable and I just don't like him. He served his purpose for me. He beat Honor AP, but I mean, let's take it and keep it in some perspective. The shared belief was clearly a means to an end for Honor AP. It was a strangely run race. Like thousand words looked like he was going to get swallowed up at some point and then just kept sticking on. I mean, that whole field, including Cezanne, who runs in the Pat Day Mile, that whole field was covered by what, a length and a half or two lengths at the wire. So it's a hard, I mean, I know it graded out strongly. It's a race that I really don't know what to do with. And I'd much rather have Honor AP out of there than thousand words. I don't know how much further he wants. I mean, he's bred to go on, but just looking at him, the way he runs, I'm just not sure that he's built to stick around for that final furlong on Saturday. So just a couple of thoughts.
And none of us have even talked about the Baffert Horse Authentic.
Yeah, I mean, that's another one of Al's big hopes that he doesn't like.
I don't know what to do. Like, honestly, like he's his work the other day, it looked good. He was 12-2 for six furlongs, out 7-124. So, I mean, he finished up running. Like, for me, the gallop out was the best part of it. Still, to me, like, as soon as he breaks off, he does one of these. And he's just not a finished product yet. He's a May 5th foal. So he just hasn't put it all together yet. I mean, when he does, if he does, look out. Like I want a future bet on the Malibu Stakes. He's my Malibu Stakes winner. I don't know if he runs. He's always into the bridle. He's always into the bit. He goes hard. And to me, that makes me wonder if he's going to see out the distance as well. He's going to be ridden away from there. He's going to have some company. And then let's see if he's good enough to stay. I'm not going to pay to find out.
Alan, I agree. He's the good horse that nobody likes. And, you know, never had a horse won a grade one million dollar race and got so little credit for it than his Haskell win because of the way he finished and the way New York traffic was coming at him. And, you know, I'm on the same wavelength. You know, if I'm playing exactas and tries and everything, he's not even on my tickets. Let him beat me in there. But you can see why people don't like him. You know, he's got the Baffert mojo. He is a grade one winner. But, you know, if the race were a mile and a 16th, I think I would have to take him very seriously, but I can't at a mile and a quarter. And I think I'm just stating the obvious. I think everybody has come up with pretty much the same conclusion.
I mean, I can't toss him completely just because I don't think the pace is going to be super fast. So I think he's going to be able to stick around. I agree that I don't particularly like him as a win candidate. It's interesting the way Baffert has worked him. It's been a bunch of six furlong works and a mile. He worked him a mile on August 25th at Del Mar. So that suggests to me that he's not completely convinced he wants to go on a mile and a quarter either. And he's trying to put as much foundation into him as he can with the works. I agree. That's the first horse who's ever won a grade $1 million race and had his stock downgraded. But he seems a little nuts. He seems still a little bit crazy. And I wouldn't be surprised if he did something silly in the final furlong there. But that's, I wanted to just quickly segue into our fantasy stable before we move on. I would say that Bill and John are out of it, but I think the other three of us could all potentially win. I look to have a stranglehold on it with Tis the Law and Art Collector. With Art Collector out now, I think that it's a little bit more open. The Derby, the winning point total is 300 for the Derby if your horse wins. So Al and Brian are at least, you know, within shouting distance. And if Tizzle Law doesn't run well, Al's got Authentic, he's got King Guillermo, and he's got Attachment Rate and Thousand Words. So I think Al should get props for getting four horses to the Derby. He should get some kind of bonus for that because that wasn't easy to do. Like I only have two. I have Tizzle Law and Enforceable. John has one. No, he has two because Mr. Big News was a late addition. Big shout there. Bill has one in New York traffic, and Brian has three. Brian has three. He's got Honor AP, Max Player, and then a late edition. Money Moves got into the gate. That was his supplemental pick, which would be hilarious if Brian ends up winning with his supplemental pick with all the railing he did against the supplemental draft, all the complaining. That would be pretty funny. But so yeah, I mean, I'm probably like 3 to 5, 4 to 5, but you know, it's definitely not impossible for me to be overtaken. So it'll be interesting to see if those guys can get the W and Tizzle runs into a roadblock. But it's been fun. It's been a good idea to do the Derby, this little Derby fantasy contest. Definitely spiced up the conversation in these, you know, this wait has been longer than the Crimean War to get to the Derby. So, you know, it was a good idea by Brian and thanks to Patty and everybody for setting it up and keeping current with it. So we touched on the Oaks last week, but now that we have the draw, I think we should run it down a little bit more because it is such a phenomenal race with a couple of really, really superstar potential fillies. Definitely not lower on the marquee for me this year. The Oaks is usually the opening act to the Derby. I think this year they have dual top billing in Louisville. Obviously, Gamine is the horse to beat. She's the fastest horse in the race. She's got questions about going a mile and an eighth, at least somewhat. But I think if she runs her race, if she's able to relax on the lead, I think it's going to be hard for them to beat her. But you know, this is in another world and another Kentucky Oaks. I feel like Gamine would probably be about 1 to 5. In this race, but this year with the competition, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think she'll probably be 3 to 5, 4 to 5. Swiss Skydiver is 8 to 5 on the morning line. Second choice, Drew the One Hole, which makes things interesting from a tactical standpoint. Ken McPeak said that he's going to tell Tyler to send from the rail. And, you know, maybe we could get a hookup early between her and Gamine and they kind of just go 1-2 the entire race. I feel like that's definitely possible. Speech is the clear third choice at 5 to 1. See if she can run back to her Ashland. I think this is a significantly tougher field than the Ashland was. And she's got that one big race. She did run Gamine to within a neck in that optional claimer at Oaklawn. So she's got that mark for her. And, you know, that was Gamine's only 2-turn try so far. So who knows what that means in terms of their compete level at this point in the Oaks. I think Gamine's gotten significantly better, but we'll see by how much. Beyond that, I think Donna Veloce is a little bit interesting. She's 15 to 1 in the morning line. I don't know if she's going to be quite that high, but I think she should be 10, 12 to 1 range. I think talent-wise, she was right there with the top of her class earlier in the year. And, you know, she obviously has had a lot of time off. She hasn't run since the Santa Isabel March 8th. At Santa Anita, but if she has developed in that time, and I think Simon Callahan's a sharp guy and he wouldn't be running her in this race if she didn't think that she, you know, has risen to the level of at least some of the second tier contenders here. I think she's really interesting. She's got a lot of experience going 2 turns. So talent wise, I think she's got a shot if she has developed in the off time. Seems to have been working well at Del Mar, worked 6 furlongs and 111 and 3 there the other day. So beyond that, I think it's a lot of filler, a lot of long shots that, you know, don't really measure up to the top contenders, especially Gamine. But the race to me is all about Gamine and whether or not she's good enough going a mile and an eighth to do what she did in the test and in the Acorn. Because if she does that, it's over, lights out for everybody else. But it's at least a question, especially if Swiss Skydiver takes it to her early. Some final thoughts on the Oaks for you guys now that we have the post positions.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it is a more interesting race than the Kentucky Derby. I mean, you can't ever say anything tops the Kentucky Derby, but if you just want to say what is the most interesting race, what is the most, you know, fascinating, compelling race, it's certainly the Oaks because of these two great horses that are going in there. A couple observations, and Joe, you touched upon this, but I want to add to it. I think Tyler Gaffleone is in a really interesting position with Swiss Skydiver. You know, what do they do here? We know that Gamine is going to go for the front. Do they go after her early and really take a job? I mean, literally like a quarter mile into the race and say, we're not going to let you get out there and get away from us, and we're going to take it right to you. And then if that's the case, do they go some impossibly fast pace? I think even if they did, I think that they're so much better to me than, well, maybe not. Speech and Donna Veloce, you're right, really are two very good fillies. But I could see them still, you know, running 1-2 because of their superiority there? Or does he decide to let Gamine get out there by two or three lengths and just try to make his run at her when he gets a chance and not take any risk of going too hard early? And now here's my, in the just whacked out fantasy world, let me throw this out there and see what everyone thinks about this. On Friday, Gamine wins the Kentucky Oaks by 8 lengths. You know, fabulous, unbelievable race again. On Saturday, Tis the Law wins the Kentucky Derby. You know, goes out and does his job. Gamine versus Tis the Law in the Preakness Stakes. How do you like that? Wow. Not impossible.
Not impossible. You're right. And you can connect the dots and say that that would be a really, really interesting matchup, especially because so many horses would fall off after the Derby where they wouldn't even go to the Preakness. That would be a really, really interesting race. But Gamine's got one hurdle ahead of her first, and that's Swiss Skydiver. And you know, Swiss Skydiver is the filly that I've been watching and saying, this is just, too, you know, every race is too tough of an ask. I mean, she's run 9 times and she's run at 8 different racetracks. And it wasn't like she was running at Monmouth and then Parks and then Delaware, where it's all in the same area. She went from Churchill Downs to Tampa, from Tampa to the fairgrounds, from Louisiana back to Miami, then to Oaklawn, then across country to Santa Anita. Then, oh, by the way, let's bring her back to Keeneland and run her against the boys in the bluegrass in a full field, and then run her a mile and a quarter in the Alabama up at Saratoga. And every single race that she's run, you know, save, you know, one, maybe the Rachel Alexandra, you would say, wow, she is just an unbelievably, you know, phenomenal filly to watch. Because I have a tough ask next to everything. 8 tracks at 9 different races, 9 different races, a number of different riders, a number of different track surfaces as far as the consistency of the racetrack across the country. She was a modest $35,000 purchase at Keeneland September versus some of these really, really well-bred fillies that sold for a lot more money. So, you know, McPeak obviously knows his filly very, very well. He knows where he can challenge her and what she can do. And the fact that she's gone, and Bill, I'm going to steal a line from you from last show, where she's turning back from a mile and a quarter to a mile and an eighth versus Gamine, who's going from 7 furlongs to 9 furlongs. And that may be at the edge of, you know, where Gamine's ability can take her. That being said, you know, Gamine's got so much speed. She's going to be the only filly in the race that can go, you know, 109 and still have something left, hopefully, at the end. So it's just a phenomenal David and Goliath type of race. And not taking anything away from a couple of the other horses that we mentioned, Donna Veloce and Speech and a couple others. She Dares the Devil, who we haven't even mentioned yet, but also is an impressive filly in her own right. You know, this really comes down to almost a match race for those two. And you could say either one of them, if they won, would be a challenge for Tis the Law, maybe in the Preakness. So it just lines up where it's going to be kind of a match race coming up this week, and then about a month from now, maybe an even better match race against the boys.
So, Bill, I think it's possible. Owner Michael Lund Peterson is a Maryland guy. He bought the filly at the Maryland sale. So I think there's every chance that if she runs that way, that she'll get that chance. So that would definitely add some excitement to the Triple Crown. Nobody's really given Speech the Just Do That I think she deserves. I don't think there's anything wrong with her Ashland. You know, she wasn't the match for Swiss Skydiver at Santa Anita, but I think she's an improving filly. And I am of the opinion that Bill, to answer your question, I think the right idea would be to take a little bit of a hold from her, let her break, take a little bit of a hold of her and get her outside of Gamine, and then hope that she's got the better stamina. I would think that would be their strategy. I think Speech sits within shouting distance of those two and then tries to outstay them. You know, at 5-1, I think she's definitely bettable. I think she's deserving of being in the win discussion. So, and what about the possibility that Donna Veloce, if she's out there working 3/4 mile and she's going to be fresh, couldn't she be part of the pace? I mean, I think there's that possibility as well. So maybe the pace could be extra hot.
Yeah, I definitely think we'll see a quicker pace relative to the par in the Oaks rather than the Derby. I think I agree with the David and Goliath metaphor, especially since Kameen costs $1.8 million and Swiss Skydiver costs $35,000. I think that's a really interesting way to look at it. But at the end of the day, I mean, Kameen is too fast on her best day. So that's to me what the race is about. And whether or not her best day is going to be at 9 furlongs or not is the question. As far as the Preakness goes, like, what if she runs and crushes them on Friday? Why not? You know, what else is there, unless you want to, you know, sit her down until the distaff, what else is there for her to run in? I mean, the Zenyatta at Santa Anita, like, who cares? Nobody cares if you win that race. I mean, I guess, you know, it's a grade one, but she's already a grade one winner, multiple grade one winners. So why not? Why not take a shot against the boys, especially if she shows that kind of rocket ship speed and is not, you know, they don't even come close to catching her in the Oaks. Why wouldn't you think that she could go out to the front and do the same thing in the Preakness and make Tizzalaw chase her? Obviously, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but I think that it is a really interesting potential matchup. And if she does blow them out in the Oaks on Saturday, why not go after the boys next? We'll see what happens. Terrific race, really exciting cards, Friday and Saturday, up and down. Waited a long time for the Oaks and the Derby to come around. It's finally here. And it even put a smile on Grinchy John Green's face. So what more could we ask for? Owning multiple graded stakes winning racehorses like Hard Not to Love and Decorated Invader is attainable with a racing partnership like West Point Thoroughbreds. Partnerships enable you to spread your ownership across several horses for less than it costs to own one horse alone. This increases your racetrack action and chances for a big horse. Learn more about why West Point Thoroughbreds is the gold standard in racing partnerships at westpointtb.com. So West Point will be represented on Derby Day in the Derby with Winning Impression for Dallas Stewart. Obviously, they've had long shots run well for Dallas Stewart with like Commanding Curve in the past. And Always Dreaming won it a couple of years ago. So we're glad that the partners are going to get to experience Derby Day, even if it's not in person, even if it's not the same as it usually would be. There's nothing like having a starter in the Kentucky Derby, I assume. I could never know that. But we're happy and excited for the guys and gals at West Point. And hopefully he can outrun his odds and really threaten like we've seen them do in the past. So good luck to all of you at West Point in the Derby. So earlier this week, we had some pretty big news on the regulatory front in racing. We had the introduction of the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act. It's going to be introduced into the Senate by Mitch McConnell, which I hear he's a pretty big deal in the Senate and Congress. Not too familiar with the guy, but he's from Kentucky, I believe. So it's obviously a big thing to have his push behind it. He is the Senate Majority Leader. They're also the backers of the bill spoke Monday of, quote, newfound compromise and consensus among the sports stakeholders to help usher in that bill. And they also outlined how a 9-member oversight board known as the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority would craft the new program, and how that authority would contract with the United States Anti-Doping Agency, otherwise known as USADA, to manage and administer the new set of rules. It says a fresh component would also cover racetrack safety standards, and that'll also be written into McConnell's new version of the bill. This is from T.D. Thornton's reporting in the TDN. I just wanted to quote the Churchill Downs chief executive, Bill Karstanjian. I hope I'm getting that name correct.
Karstanjian.
Okay, thank you. He says the crux of the bill is that this new entity, the authority, capital A, will have jurisdiction over the design, implementation, and enforcement of anti-doping and medication controls, as well as racetrack safety protocols. Says with respect to the anti-doping and medication control program, the authority will contract with USADA, which I already said, for their services in managing and administering the program developed by the authority. Says the authority may also contract with state racing commissions, as it makes sense both with respect to the medication and control program and racetrack safety program. So it was kind of low on specifics. I'm going to defer to Bill on a lot of this. It seems like it has the backing of the majority of the industry. But the 9-member oversight panel is going to be mostly from people outside the industry. It's going to be an independent board. It says it's going to be supported by 2 substantive standing committees, one for medication and anti-doping, one for track safety. A 3rd standing committee will evolve out of the blue ribbon panel, blah, 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 blah. So it seems like a lot of words and not too many commitments on what's going to happen, what we're going to do. I will say that any kind of compromise and coordination and cooperation across the sport is a good thing. That's something we lament all the time. But we had something like this recently with the Racetrack Safety Alliance, and I'm not sure how many reforms have definitively come out of that. So I think that, you know, while I applaud any movement towards uniformity, I think definitely getting USADA involved is a very good thing. We need some outside help when it comes to regulating medication in our sport, obviously. I would wait to see what kind of specifics come out of this. It is a big deal, though, I think mainly because Mitch McConnell is behind it. And now it has a legitimate chance to pass the Senate. Bill, I'll toss it to you first.
Yeah, a couple of things, and you threw out a lot there, Joe. First of all, from people who that know a lot more about this than I do, say that this is going to happen. And the reason why is McConnell has a track record of not bringing up legislation when he doesn't know that it's a sure thing, that he's not going to have look bad with egg all over his face and bring up legislation and not have it go. And in this, you know, highly polarized world that we live in right now, this is the ultimate bipartisan issue. I mean, you know, Democrats like horses, Republicans like horses, people in red states like horses, people in blue states like horses, and want good things to happen for horses. So I am very optimistic that this is going to happen and we are going to have this new, you know, alphabet organization, et cetera. And I understand your skepticism. This is the 843rd, you know, alphabet organization that will be out there and come up with. And you're also right about something else. We need to learn a lot more about this for the specifics about, you know, things like, again, questions people raise, how is it going to be paid for? Is LASIK going to be okay? Is LASIK not going to be okay? That sort of thing. But to me, what this all comes down to and reason why I think this is a really good thing for horse racing. And look, you know, they're going to have uniformity. So you have the same Butte withdrawal rules in Delaware that you have in Arizona. Who cares? Nobody cares. But that, you know, that's one of the things that they're touting. To me, this is all about USADA. And what I wrote, and we go back to Jason Service and Jorge Navarro. And if anybody out there thought that horse racing was doing a good job dealing with cheating, well, how could you possibly think that after Navarro Service and the indictments? You know, the sport has had 200 years to try to work on this problem and fix it, and they can't do it. And it took the federal government to come in and do their dirty work for them. And as I've said a couple of times in this podcast, federal government is going to go away and racing is going to be left to its own devices. USADA is an organization that knows what they're doing. They got Lance Armstrong. They've kept the Olympics clean. The sport of horse racing will be a lot better off and a lot cleaner when, you know, the new sheriff in town comes in, Travis Tiger and his boys, and they're out there trying to catch these guys and they're out there doing everything that we think that should be done to clean up the sport. So of the dozen or so aspects that this bill has brought up and the things that it's going to cover, to me, I don't care about 11. I care about 12. I care about USADA. I care about Travis Tiger. And I think anybody who has been preaching like we have for almost a year now about the need to clean up this sport should be very happy that it looks like this major step is likely to happen now.
Yeah. And quite simply, this is one of the reasons why I'm so excited today also, is that we've been begging and canvassing for some kind of uniform set of rules, but more importantly, for an organization to be overseeing the testing and enforcing the rules and the penalties that come up with people who cheat. I mean, you know, people have been listening to our podcast for a year, and they've heard us bang the table, you know, really since March, that we need uniformity and that the industry as a whole wants to have some kind of set of rules and an organization to oversee it. And then most importantly, to have a bite in the penalties if somebody fails, you know, to abide by the rules. So this is a great step. The fact that you have the organizations behind it is fantastic. The fact that you have, like Bill said, you know, you have a very strong person in DC and who resides in Kentucky and understands the importance of the industry to the Kentucky residents and his constituents. It's just all falling together. And Bill, like you said, it took us two centuries as an industry to get to this point, and it took the government and the powers that be 6 months really to come up with a solution. And hopefully this one is going to catch and this one is going to, you know, take hold and be a part of the fabric of the industry that really needs to have this kind of an oversight committee and rules and regulations and an authority to actually follow through with it. So I couldn't be happier about it.
And I think as important as it is for horse racing insiders to know that this can be or might be coming, like, it's equally important for those on the outside. We've been talking for months and months about the public perception of horse racing. And if the public sees governmental or federal intervention at that sort of level, and if the program yields results, gives something to people to latch onto that, hey, these guys are really on the job, they're doing the job, and they're weeding out the bad stuff. So I think that can only be a good thing. I mean, I do think it's, you know, it's a great thing that that Senator McConnell is behind it. Obviously, that carries some weight. Andy Barr from Kentucky was on the stage as well. He's previously introduced legislation with his Democratic counterpart Paul Tonko in the House, and he spoke of I don't know what exact language was, but basically mirroring the bill in the House of Representatives that gets sent to them from the Senate, which might streamline the passage of something like that. Nancy Pelosi is obviously across the aisle from Mitch McConnell, but you know, Dianne Feinstein also from California has been vocal on the Democratic side. But I mean, you would have to believe that there would be bipartisan support for it, and why not? Like Bill said, it's an issue that everybody can sort of get behind. So I think it's a step in the right direction. You know, let's see what happens in practice. Let's see how long it takes to implement. Let's see how they pay for it. But on the surface, obviously, it's a good thing for the game.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with what you guys said and echo what Bill said about, you know, USADA being the most important part of it, because racing is very good at creating boards, at creating panels, creating new alphabet organizations, and has so far been very not good at actual enforcement. So I think that getting an outside entity, especially one with as much credibility as USADA, is a big thing in terms of cleaning up our sport and how this thing is going to work. It's fortunate in this case that the Senate Majority Leader happens to be from the biggest horse industry state in the country. I think that will really help us out here in terms of getting this thing eventually onto the Senate floor. You know, I can't comment on the specifics of the bill because I haven't delved into it that deeply. But what Al said about Andy Barr and Paul Tonko, those guys have been pushing this for a long time. So there's a lot of hard work in those two offices that have gotten this to this point. And yeah, like, the main thing is to get the enforcement of medication rules outside of the hands of racing. And that's like, you know, it sounds like an indictment, because it kind of is, but that's the main thing. And I think I'm glad that people in racing have started to recognize that and realize that, you know, we're not good at policing ourselves. We're not good at, you know, uniformity and cooperation in general. I think it's getting better, but this is something that needs to be taken outside of the sport and be an independent enforcement agency. And I think that, you know, that's the key takeaway from this bill. And, you know, like Al said, who knows how long this is from passing, who knows how long it is from being set up and implemented. But it's a step in the right direction for sure. But we're going to have to wait for more specifics in terms of the actual bill and its effects. Joining a West Point Thoroughbreds partnership can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie among people surrounding high-class horses and stakes action for a fraction of the cost of trying to do it on your own. Learn more at westpointtb.com. The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. With over 500 clients in the horse business, they have proven strategies to save you taxes. Learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. So our Green Group Guest of the Week this week is a major celebrity in the horse racing world. We are so excited to bring him on, Mike Smith. Thank you for joining us, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Of course. So you will be on Honor AP in the Derby in a couple of days. You're a past Derby winner, obviously, with Justify and Giacomo. You know a lot about riding in this race. Wanted to ask about Honor AP first. Seems like a horse who has developed steadily over time, ran second last time in the Shared Belief. How have you seen him grow, and what makes you think that he's about to run the best race of his life?
Well, the Shared Belief was, you know, after the Santa Anita Derby, which was a mile and eighth, we shortened him. The Shared Belief was a mile and 16th, so it shortened back up, and he didn't get a whole lot of, you know, serious training in between the two races. You know, they certainly wanted him to be peaking at this time, you know, and not then. So, you know, I think his best work going into that race was a 102 or something like that, very slow. So he kind of just run a little bit sluggishly and finally come running at the end. And actually, they still ran really well. He ran a 102 buyer, I believe, to run second. So that was good. But since then, we've really stepped up his training. We really put some sharp works into him. And then after his two really sharp works, we just did a kind of a maintenance work last time out. And man, he did it so nice. I think he went 7/8 of a mile in 27. 127 and galloped out in 40, which was really, really good. He did all on his own. So he's coming into the Derby training extremely well and really fine-tuned and fit to run his best effort.
Hey, Mike, it's Bill Finley. Thanks for joining us. And even though you're not riding him, let's get your take on Authentic as well, because you did ride him up through his last race in the Haskell. And a lot of people are commenting on the fact that he still seems a little bit immature, that he hasn't really figured the game out. And also a lot of people don't think he's necessarily a mile and a quarter is a sweet spot for him. Again, understanding you're not riding him, but you certainly know a lot about him. Your take on him, and if you could answer those two particular questions about his perceived immaturity and his ability to go a mile and a quarter.
Well, early on, I mean, he used to look around a whole lot, Bill. He would kick away from his competition so easy. He's so talented. He's a very athletic horse. And he would kick away from him so easy, and he kind of just leave him out there on his own. He'd get to looking around a lot, which he did a little bit in the Haskell, but not as bad as he had done in the past. So he's certainly getting better about it. And then again, yeah, I mean, the distance would be the question with him. Again, sometimes, you know, these horses, you think it's going to be a problem, and then they go out there on the lead and they just keep on running. But he certainly has the talent. He deserves to be there. He's a very athletic horse. I see him, if they want to be built, I see him on the lead, probably on his own, especially with our collector out now. So hopefully he won't, you know, he'll have some sort of company that will keep him, that keep the pace honest anyway. And then I shouldn't be too far off of probably him, New York Traffic, and Tis the Law.
So Mike, when you handicap this race and you look at your horse in comparison to the other group, obviously it's an unusual race in the sense that there are so many participants in it. How do you, you know, when you close your eyes and think about the way that the perfect race would be for Honor AP, how would that set up for you? Is it having a couple of speed horses and you sit on the outside? Is it you tucking in on the rail and saving ground? Just give us an idea of what like the picture perfect race would be in your mind.
Well, means I got the 16th hole. I mean, it would probably be a whole lot of work to try and get tucked in down on the rail. But the speed is to the outside. Hopefully they'll, you know, we'll all break well and break running, and I can just kind of follow them on over and just hopefully have a clear trip on the outside of them. And that would be good for him because I think he's a horse that wants the distance, you know, in his race going a mile and eighth. And when he trains in the morning, the best part of everything is at the very end. I mean, he seems to just keep on going. So the mile and quarter should be right up his alley. And I'm hoping I can really get marching forward at the 3.5 so that the quarter pole, I don't have a lot to make up, and then just see if he's good enough to run on by who's ever been fortunate enough to hit the front.
Hey, Mike, it's Alan Carrasco. It's an honor to have you on with us. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've ridden a Derby winner before for John Sheriffs, rode a Triple Crown winner for Bob Baffert. How difficult at the end of the day was it for you to decide to ride Honor AP over Authentic?
You know, they're one up. I mean, they're tied with each other. You know, the first time they ran against each other, Authentic beat Honor AP. We'd come off a foot injury, had missed some time. So I knew he wasn't 100% going into that race. Now in the Santa Anita Derby, I knew he was. And then, you know, extra eighth of a mile. I was really happy to see the way he ran. And I thought that the distance would really suit him well. Then I got the opportunity to ride Authentic, and although he ran really good, he probably didn't run his A race that day, but he still pulled it off. But again, I just truly think that when we're going to go a mile eighth and further, that's when you see Honor AP really start to shine, really start to stand out. And that's just what made my mind up. I think he'll get the distance. I think the mile and a quarter is, again, I can't wait to see what he does going a mile and a quarter.
I wanted to ask you about your previous Derby wins. They came from him with very different circumstances. I remember with Giacomo, I remember you saying early in his career that he reminded you of Holy Bull, and he kind of had fallen off a little bit for a while there and then shocked everybody at 50-1. And then Justify was a much shorter price. He was much more heralded coming into the Derby. Can you reflect on those two rides and maybe the kind of different pressure you felt and the different feelings you got after winning?
Well, with Giacomo, I mean, you know, he looked like a lot like his dad. He didn't have the same running style, and he wasn't as good as horse as his father was, as far as a racehorse was. But he was a horse that was, you know, we were running out west where the tracks were really fast at the time. They weren't suiting him, but he was still running extremely well in all the preps. He would run second or third, really gallop out strong. So I knew that once we got off the West Coast racetracks and once we got to go a little further, he was gonna excel. He was gonna run better. Was it gonna be good enough for him to win the Derby? I wasn't really sure, but I was talking myself into it. You know, I'd ridden his father in the Derby, and he was a big favorite, and he probably ran his worst race that he actually ran was in the Derby. And so I just wanted to redeem his father's name, so to say. You know, so I was kind of using that for to keep me pumped up and keep me excited about it all. And then the more I looked at the race, and especially after they drew it, I saw that man, this pace is going to be really hot. And then the horses that set off the pace were, if that pace could drag them into it a little bit, this could really set up for me. And that's exactly what happened. So we were 50-1. We didn't have a whole lot of pressure on us going into that one. Now going into, you know, when I was with Justify, it was a whole different story. I mean, we had all the hype. He was the horse to beat. We actually believed that he had the kind of talent that could pull off a Triple Crown kind of thing if we were blessed enough to, you know, of course, win the first, you know, first one, then onto the second and onto the last. But he was that kind of horse. So there was a whole lot more pressure with him. Now going in this year with the Honor AP, again, this is a horse that I think has a legitimate chance. I mean, we all saw Tiz Law's last race, but that doesn't mean they're always going to come back and run that same kind of race. And you know, I think that if I'm within a length or two of them heading for home, I'm not without a big chance to maybe run them all down.
Mike, since we brought it up, I want to go back to Holy Bull. And he was terrific before the Kentucky Derby. If memory serves me right, he won the Bluegrass. He was terrific after the Kentucky Derby, won the Met Mile. He was probably one of the two or three most talented horses you've ever ridden. He didn't run a step, not one step in the Kentucky. I mean, out of the gate, he didn't show any speed. Is it just one of those things, or all these years later, do you have any theories why that is?
You know, Bill, I honestly don't think he cared for Churchill that much. When I go back and really think about it and look at it, they breezed him 3/8 of a mile. He was over at Kingdon training. He was working dynamite. And they came over to blow him out a 3/8 of a mile. And he went like, and it was unbelievably slow. I mean, you couldn't get Holy Bull to go backwards that slow. I think it was like a 39 or something like that for 3/8. It was like he didn't even work good over it, which was strange. And that's just kind of the way he was in the post parade and in the gate. He was just, nothing was there. He just wasn't one. You know, I was more worried. I thought the only thing that could get me beat is if I fell off him in the post parade, because he was pretty aggressive in the post parade. He'd play a lot and rear up and all this crazy stuff. And he did none of that day and ran that way. He just ran very, very flat.
Mike, since we're going back in some of the best horses you've ever ridden, when Bob Baffert was on the show a couple of months ago, you know, we asked him, out of all the horses you've trained, who was the best horse you ever had? And he didn't give us the best horse, but he said, you know, the best races that I've ever trained a horse from, or I've ever seen a horse compete in, was Arrogate, which obviously you were a big part of. And he mentioned, you know, going from the Travers to the Breeders' Cup Classic to the Pegasus World Cup to the Dubai World Cup, and just said that those races back to back to back to back were just, you know, off the charts. Walk us through a little bit on the top money earner that's ever graced this earth.
You know, at a mile and a quarter, man, just all out. Probably of all of them that I've ever been blessed enough to have ridden, I think even the numbers show that Arrogate was probably the fastest. He was just a cool horse to ride. Great to be. He had a high cruising speed, and he had stamina that just never stopped. I mean, he just seemed to go faster and faster and faster. I remember the Travers, and we were running pretty quick, and we headed for home. And I asked him to run, and he just picked it up like it was nothing and just continued on. It was pretty incredible, you know. And to come back and see him break the track record and run a mile and a quarter in under 2 minutes was unbelievable. And then he went into the Breeders' Cup and was able to run down California Chrome and California Chrome that day probably got a pretty soft pace. I mean, he went pretty easy up front, and I thought he was going to be very difficult to run down. And for him to run him down, I thought was incredible. Go on into the Pegasus, we probably pretty much used that as a he kind of used that as a work to get into the World Cup. He won so easy in the Pegasus. And he needed every bit of that because, as you remember watching the World Cup, he gets away slow. They squeeze him out of the gate. I got absolutely no chance. I'm dead last. I'm supposed to be, you know, laying at least second, maybe third, to, you know, at worst. And here I am, dead last, about 15 behind the field. And for him to just creep back into that race and then finish the way he did and then beat a horse like Gunrunner and doing it was the ultimate. The only bad thing was after that, we came to Del Mar, and Del Mar was a place he just never really cared for. The tracks at the time, especially still, actually, that were very, very deep. Deep racetracks. It seemed like the stronger you are, that the deeper you go into the ground. And he just never cared for that track. Even before the Travers, you know, he won a little prep race before the Travers there at Saratoga. It's a 3-horse field, and he won, but he just did win. I mean, the horse that he beat that day actually didn't win a race again until lost to Al for claiming 8. You know, wow. So that's how much he hated Del Mar. But you get him off of Del Mar, man, and he's never beat.
Mike, one thing I marvel about your career is the number of Hall of Fame distaffers that you've sat on. Azari, Inside Information, Songbird, obviously Zenyatta. Midnight Bizu probably isn't quite in that same discussion, but obviously a really nice race mare. You've been away from her now for a couple of times. Can you talk to us about how that's been, missing last couple rides on her, and what is the outlook for this year's distaff? Will you be able to ride her this year?
Yeah, first of all, yeah, I really missed her. You know, we didn't get a chance to, you know, as you well know, I traveled quite a bit, and with all these, you know, protocols and not being able to go into Saratoga really kind of crushed my summer up pretty good, to be honest with you. But yeah, I've been blessed every time I get a ride one of these mares, and I think, well, that's the end of that. I'll never get another one like that one. Well, then here comes another one, and here comes another one, then here comes one like, you know, Zenyatta, who's probably the greatest mare of all times. And then after her, you know, I was even blessed with Songbird and Unique Bella, and then along comes Midnight Bizu. And finally, I do get to get back on her. I saw the protocols in Kingman, so you get to fly in. You just got to get in and take a test before you ride and clear a test, and that's pretty much it there. So I'm going to get to ride her back. She's going to run there on the October, I think it's the 2nd. I'm not positive, but I think it's October 2nd. But so I'm excited about that. I'm excited to get reunited with her.
I just wanted to ask about your riding style, because you're known as a big money race rider. You don't ride the quantity of horses that some other guys do, but I think, you know, if you want a guy to win a big race, you're one of the top 2 or 3 guys most people would pick. And just from an outsider layman's perspective, you seem to be a very calm guy during the race. You don't seem to ever panic. You have a laid back personality too, honestly. So it makes sense in that way. But, you know, where does that kind of come from, that kind of calm, when all the eyes are on you, usually as a big favorite? How do you stay relaxed, and how do you stay even during these big races?
Well, I'm certainly calm, but inside, I'd be lying to you if I told you I wasn't nervous. If you ain't nervous, then you're not up for the race or up for the game. That you got, it's just how you use that energy, you know. And I've just learned to slow it down. I think just with, you know, getting the opportunity to ride with great riders and learning from them and watching them and knowing that panicking ain't going to help anything. You know, you get away, step slow, you wind up rushing into a fast pace or something like that. It's just learning to really get a horse into a rhythm. And once you get a good horse into a rhythm, you just point them in the right direction and they're going to run, you know. And so you get them into a good, comfortable rhythm. You give them a place to go when it's time, you know, try and set up a good trip for them. And then you pull the trigger and they're going to fire.
Hey, Mike, you're doing what you're doing at an age 55 years old, where most jockeys have either retired or on the tail end of their career or not riding nearly as well or achieving what they did in their 40s. What is possible now? I mean, do you think about an end? Do you think about how much longer you want to go on? And what do you think will be the ultimate reason why you might say, okay, this is it, I am retiring?
At times, you know, I think about, you know, retiring, but then I think, well, where else am I going to have this kind of fun? I mean, I'm actually having a blast right now, getting the opportunity to ride, you know, just in these big races. And if I did anything right early on in my career, Bill, I really took up physical fitness instead of, you know, going out playing golf and not doing a whole lot. I mean, every morning, I just made it a way of life. I literally train every morning. If I'm not training myself, I have two different personal trainers that train me probably at least 5 times a week. And I go at it pretty hard, and I've been doing it for a long time, and it's starting to pay off in my later years. I mean, I'm every bit as fit. As far as my charts are going, I'm still as fit as I was 10 years ago. So for some reason, I'm hanging in there. And as long as I can continue to do that, I plan to ride another few years. If I start feeling that I'm hurting them and I'm not helping them, and I'm, you know, you'll be able to see it out there. It just starts to, whenever it starts, when I start embarrassing myself, then I'll call it quits. Or if you see me embarrass myself, you tell me.
I think you're a ways from that. I think you're all right for now.
Mike, I just have one more question for you, just because probably after this year, McKenzie's going to retire and stand at stud. Tell the audience about what you think about McKenzie and all the races that you've ridden. When you think of McKenzie, what's the, you know, what comes through your mind?
You know, he's one of those throwbacks of the old good horses, man. I mean, he can run, you know, 3/4 of a mile, and you can stretch him out the following race going 1.8 miles. You can back him back up to 1 mile. You can go ahead and try 1.25 miles with him, and he'll fire and run huge every time. I mean, he's a really, really, you know, talented horse. You know, early on in his 3-year-old career, he got hurt a little bit and maybe never really got to be what he really could have been. But in saying that, he's still competing at the highest of levels. And I wouldn't be surprised if he'll handle this, if he'll come back. I mean, last year in this same race, the Isle of Sheba, he was amazing that day. I think he set the track record that day, but he really took to Churchill Downs. He really liked it. So I'm hoping that's the case again. And if that's the case, he's going to run big again on Friday. So they're excited about that. Then after that, they'll decide where they're going to point him as far as Breeders' Cup, whether that be the mile or the classic.
All right, Mike, we can't thank you enough for joining us. Best of luck this weekend. Safe trip. And we hope to see you riding for a while, because if you don't, then you could never come on an illustrious podcast like this one. Sorry,
guys. Well, I appreciate it, man. It was great talking to you guys.
Thanks, Mike.
Right, thanks, best of luck this weekend.
Thank you.
Go get them.
Thank you. Thank you.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. As the Green Group Guest of the Week, Mike Smith will receive a free 1-hour tax consultation. Learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. We'll be right back after this message from The Green Group.
The Green Group is widely recognized as the top-rated tax and accounting firm specializing in the horse business. Why do the top owners, breeders, pinhookers, and trainers trust The Green Group as their tax advisors? The difference is experience. Firm founder Len Green has over 4 decades of experience owning, breeding, and racing horses. First-hand knowledge gives Green Group clients proven tax and money-saving strategies. Visit The Green Group at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
So Barkley Tagg made some unfortunate news yesterday when he was doing a little bit of press for the Derby after just landing in Louisville. He was asked about the protests that are expected to happen all week. We've touched on it on the show before. Here's what he had to say.
You know, we go back to the hotel. We have a driver who takes us back to the hotel and brings us here in the morning. And we train the horse. And I don't know. I don't know what these guys are going to do with these riders. Who knows? All I know is you're not allowed to shoot them and they're allowed to shoot you. That's what it looks like to me. So I don't know what to think about it.
So I thought those comments were incredibly disappointing and unnecessary and really kind of inflaming things for no reason. And it just goes to show you how pervasive and how dangerous the racial unrest and rhetoric, particularly on one side, is in this country right now. And Barkley, to me, seemed like he just couldn't help himself, probably because he's been riled up by the president. And I know people don't want to hear this, but you can draw a direct line, in my eyes, from Trump saying, when the looting starts, the shooting starts, to one of his diehard supporters murdering 2 people last week in the street, and his refusal to condemn it. And it's just insane on its face. First of all, it serves no purpose but to inflame. But that's where we are. And it's where we are as a society, and it's also where we are as an industry. And it's Kentucky Derby week. And the trainer of the favorite is lamenting the fact that, quote, you can't shoot them 1 week after a right-wing militant killed 2 of them in the street. And this will now be one of the major stories that overwhelms what should be a week of celebration for our sport, just when racing is starting to finally recover from the PR nightmare surrounding last year's breakdowns at Santa Anita. So we appreciate that, Barkley. Thanks for that. And, you know, I think the bigger implication here is you wonder why there's no diversity in racing. And we were hesitant to talk about it as four white guys recently, but I feel pretty comfortable saying that people like Barkley Tagg are one of the main reasons why there's no diversity in racing. To pretend that there isn't this substantial amount of generational hostility to diversifying our sport is absurd to me. And I think the situation is improving, but when the trainer of the Kentucky Derby favorite, unprovoked, equates protesters, the majority of which are black, and vast majority of which are 100% peaceful, to rioters who he complains that he can't shoot, why would a person of color ever think that's an industry that would welcome me? And it's especially contradictory when this year, for the first time in 13 years, we have black owners of a Derby horse. Necker Island has two African-American owners, and those owners support the Black Lives Matter movement. And this is what they have to put up with in horse racing in 2020. So it wasn't necessary. And it shows how much work we have to do in this sport to get rid of this racist underbelly that people don't want to exist, but really does exist. And I think Barkley let everybody down. And it's unfortunate because otherwise Tis the Law is a very, you know, likable horse, New York bred, Saratoga stable. Jack Knowlton's always been good with us and with the media. And there's really no reason for me to root against him. But now I'm going to be kind of grossed out, honestly, if he wins on Saturday. And it was disgusting. And it was unnecessary, uncalled for. And it really is a reflection of where we are as a society, as an industry. All right, so that's going to do it for this week's edition of the TDN Writers Room presented by Keeneland. Remember, Keeneland September starts September 13th. That's next Sunday. All the action will be streamed on the TDN website and on Keeneland.com. I want to thank Bill Finley, John Green, Alan Carrasso, our Green Group guest of the week, Mike Smith, our producer, Patty Wolf, our editors, Anthony LaRocca and Danny Seifer, and our production coordinator, Michelle Sabrino. Thank you so much for watching. Have a great blast of a Derby weekend. We will see you next week, and wear a mask.